is Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, February 4th, 2011. It's hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And as we do every week at this time, it's time for the Federal News Countdown. And I've been telling you throughout the show today that we have a little bit of a twist for you. Welcome to the Federal News Countdown this week. Deborah Roth, who's a partner at the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and one of the hosts of Fed Talk every Friday at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's nice to see you, Debbie. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Francis, for inviting me.
Can you believe we have sunshine outside today?
I wouldn't really call that sunshine.
Well,
I'd call it haze.
Based on what we've had for the last week or so, I'm going to call that sunshine. I've been teasing people for the last hour or so because we're going to do it a little differently than we normally do the countdown this week. And you're a veteran, so I'm sure that you can handle this this change. Rule number one.
And I always have a lot to say.
There's no question about that. Rule number one is you're always honest with the audience. Yesterday at 11 o'clock, the person who was going to be on the panel, Alan Baloudis of Cisco, said that he couldn't make it. And I'm not calling him out. He had a client meeting that he had.
Might be calling him out.
I'm totally not. And I'm looking forward to I'm going to schedule Alan to come back. The next opening we have is March and he's in. So, it's not that at all. But he got called to this client meeting. He could not be on the show today. And I'm sorry that he can't be here today. And so I'm going to fill in for him today. I've never done the show.
Are you going to be Alan?
I'm not going to be Alan. I chose the stories myself, what I think are the three most important news stories of the week that are important to people who work for the federal government. You've done the same thing.
I have.
So I'm going to be both the host and a panelist on the countdown today. This is the first time this ever happened.
You can do it.
And it probably will be the last time that it ever happens.
Alan, if you're listening.
Yeah, no, I want to say again, I'm not calling him out because it was not like he just said, I don't feel like going anymore. He was very apologetic, and I really appreciate that. And I love it having him on the show. And so we'll get him on again in March is the next space that we have. And we were going to get this week's countdown going with...
Number three!
Debbie, your story number three is from GovExec, and the headline is Lawmaker Proposes Ban on TSA Collective Bargaining. We thought this was going to go away at some point, and it doesn't ever seem to go away. This time it's Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi.
You know, and it seems like, I don't want to say it's always TSA, but if you're looking for where the linchpin is on the sort of the debate between the two sides of the aisle on how to manage the federal workforce, it seems like TSA always comes up in the discussion. There's a few places in the government that they like to look at and pick on. I guess if you were a federal employee, you might feel picked on by Congress. But TSA is always up there in the top three, and there it is. I don't – why was I surprised? I don't even know why I was surprised. It didn't originate from the House. It came out of the democratically controlled Senate, but it came out of a Republican senator. And just when TSA, a workforce of at least 40,000, so let's say there's at least 40,000 Americans wearing a TSA uniform somewhere in an airport, you know, in the United States, there's at least 40,000. They just when they thought they were going to get collective bargaining rights, he's proposing to ban any kind of collective bargaining. And he claims national security interest. MTEU and AFGE presidents have come out against it. My viewpoint had nothing to do with the value of unions and collective bargaining. You know, from what I see in my perspective, it was two things. A lot of people in the government don't view TSA as national security, not a national security agency. They look at them as a security agency.
But they think of them more as on the level of security guards rather than law enforcement officials.
Is that right? That's right. And when he compares it to the FBI and CIA, where there is no collective bargaining, and he says TSA is the same. That's really an enormous stretch in what the screeners are performing. And it's not to minimize what the screeners are performing. It's just very different.
Yeah.
They're a security force. They're in uniforms. They're out there. They're obvious. Everybody knows who they are. They're shift workers. You know, they're clock punchers. And traditionally in our country, that kind of workforce is unionized for reasons that have to do with workplace issues. It's laborious. It's very physically intense. They're usually on their feet, you know, for 8 hours.
Are federal workers who are the equivalent of firefighters and EMT type people, are they unionized?
It, you know, it sort of depends upon what agencies you're in.
Because it strikes me that that's the same kind, it might be the same kind of thing when you're talking about being shift workers and that kind of thing.
Well, the biggest workforce of that nature is also in a uniform, and your listeners know them as Legacy INS and Legacy Customs, including the Border Patrol, which is a uniformed force. Of at least 12,000 Border Patrol agents, which was in Legacy INS. All of that workforce is now in CBP, Customs and Border Protection. And when you count up the number of uniforms and shift workers who do that function now, they're at the border, and you have to pass through a uniformed U.S. citizen to enter the country, either for your immigration status or, you know, your possessions, what are you bringing into the United States, you're looking at well over 50,000 people in uniform. And when they were in Legacy INS and Customs, they were in bargaining units. It's the nature of the work they're doing. They're security-type officials, guards, doing shift work that has a labor-intensive aspect. And so when you look at the increases in, for lack of a better word, but bargaining rights or just having a say in how the workplace was managed. Morale at TSA, I don't know if job success went up, but morale went up. And usually when you have, as an employment lawyer, when you have happy when you have happy and engaged employees who feel like they're part of something, that they actually are part of something, they have a say, they're usually really looking out for your interests as an employer.
It's the story that seems to keep on giving because just when we thought it would go away, it's back. The lawmaker proposes ban on TSA collective bargaining is the headline from GovExec, and it's Deborah Roth's story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week. My story number 3 is from Federal News Radio. It's by our executive editor, Jason Miller. Just went up today, and the headline is DHS mandates HSPD-12 card use. And it says agencies must develop plans by March 31st to fully implement the use of secure ID cards under Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12. And this is another story that keeps on giving. HSPD 12 cards, the first deadline was now, I think, in fall of 07, maybe 08. And here we are in spring of 11. And DHS,
the universal ID card.
DHS is just getting around to implementing this. This is not only going to affect DHS also. GSA is partnering to implement the government-wide architecture, the Federal Identity Credential and Access Roadmap and Implementation Guidance. And the full story, of course, posted at federalnewsradio.com. But this is bringing in GSA's building service, public building service, and it's going to be another vehicle, hopefully, for agencies to get themselves ready and moved all the way. We've seen some piecemeal adoption of this, and we've seen the agencies that have adopted it be pretty satisfied with the results that they're getting.
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, to be able to have one credential to get you into any building, so we have some sense of who's coming and going in some of these places.
And there's nothing, and the big value of the uniformity in the system is that feds whose business requires them to go from one government agency to the other, you know, you're counting on the security guards at the entrances to many of these federal buildings being able to recognize ID cards from different agencies. And that's, you know, that's how imposters and fraud happens. And so there's a great security aspect to it.
I'm reminded of the parallel at Nationals Park. When you go in the media entrance at Nationals Park, there's a poster that's hanging up. And there must be 20 or 30 different credentials that there are samples of. And the security guard looks at yours and then looks at this poster if it's not one that he or she recognizes immediately, and they're supposed to go and match the picture of the sample to the one that you're holding if it's not one of the ones that are normally issued.
And to be able to see the exact details and notice an imperfection that might suggest.
Yes, that's exactly
fraud.
Right. And you know what? At a baseball stadium, when it's
right.
some goober like me who's coming in to cover a ball game, that's fine. That's an okay thing. I don't want to see that when I go to an agency. I'm happy to show my credential that shows that I'm really who I say I am. And whatever I have to do to justify my existence, I'm willing to do it because I don't want somebody who's not who they say they are to be able to get in.
And it also reminds me of every once in a while, post 9/11, we hear about that push to have a uniform driver's license mm-hmm. across the 50 states, which, you know, you run into the states' rights issues. And negotiating with 50 different independent states. And I get all that, but there is some value when you, going back to my story number one, the TSA screeners, when they're looking at something, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what airport,
yeah.
what state, you know, to be able, for the purpose of what's the ID's purpose? Why are we showing our ID to get past this checkpoint?
Yeah. As mobile as our society is, it's entirely conceivable that I, as a resident of Maryland, could get on an airplane in, say, Vancouver, Washington, where not a lot of people from Maryland go through.
Correct.
And it's entirely possible that if I were not Francis Rose from Maryland, but I wanted to play one on TV and pretend that I was, that guy might or woman might not have ever seen a Maryland ID before and not know what to look for and what not to look for. So it's pretty sticky, and we'll keep an eye on it, of course.
We agree on this. If we could run the government.
Well, there you have it.
For the minute.
We should make that suggestion to people then. DHS mandates HSPD 12 card use is the headline. It's our exclusive at federalnewsradio.com. Our executive editor, Jason Miller, has that story. And we have story number two for you from Deborah Roth and from me. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we'll continue the Federal News Countdown in just a moment.
To go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard, in cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
The top levels of the federal government are talking about agile software development. If you are a federal program manager and would like to explore this topic with your peers, come to a free February breakfast forum brought to you by Solutions Developers. Our speaker will be Jim York, nationally known Scrum trainer at AFEI headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m., moderated by me, John Gilroy. More details at AFEI.org, and then click on events.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
The Pentagon is deciding who will build the next generation of military aerial refueling tankers. At stake, American jobs. EADS North America is ready to support 48,000 American jobs today. But Boeing is running misleading ads, attacking EADS and the Americans who will build the EADS tanker.
And most of their jobs are in Europe.
And they'll stay in Europe.
Now, I may not be an expert.
Right. They're not experts. They're actors paid by Boeing. Here's what real workers who will build the EADS tanker in America have to say.
EADS North America does win this contract.
it's going to have a direct impact on the jobs that are created here.
They're keeping the jobs right here in the United States.
Being an American worker, it's ludicrous that another company would say that EADS is going to take jobs across seas. Would they provide a living for me and my family right now?
Go to KC45Now.com. Tell Congress to stand with these American workers. Let EADS North America put 48,000 Americans to work right away. Paid for by EADS North America.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Government innovation. It can be challenging, yet so important. How can you ensure innovation is part of your organization? We'll find out. We'll tell you how you can help soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan through Operation Jumpstart. And how do you reach out to Latinos online? Lessons learned from GobiernoUSA.gov this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and FederalNewsRadio.com.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week, a little bit different. It is Deborah Roth, a partner in the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and co-host of Fed Talk, Fridays at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and me choosing the stories this week. And am I doing all right? I
mean, so far.
Okay.
The you stories that we story number three,
okay.
So we'll see.
All right. Thank you for reserving judgment. The stories that we've chosen for the Federal News Countdown this week, Debbie and I, are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we're up to... Second most important federal story of the week, according to Deborah Roth, is from the Washington Post. The headline is Bush whistleblower protector faces jail. And this is the ongoing, another story that keeps on giving. It's the Scott Block deal.
Yeah. And this is a story that's at least 4 years old. And many people in the federal community, the watchdog groups, and federal employees who, you know, have at their heart, you know, the belief in the whistleblowing keeps, you know, from the inside of the government out, keeps it honest. They've been watching what's happening to the former head of the Office of Special Counsel for years, and it looks like there's one more roadblock before it'll be a final, finality to it. But I chose this story not just because of the story, mm-hmm. but I chose the story because I think it demonstrates that in our system, if it's working right, no one's really above it. And here is an agency head, a political appointee, mm-hmm. whose office, the Office of Special Counsel, is a very small agency. It's about 120 FTEs. And their main job is to protect whistleblowers from reprisal and to enforce the Hatch Act, which is political activity, prevent, you know, the bar of political activity inside the everyday workings of the executive branch. And his own employees turned him in mm-hmm. to OPM's IG, because OSC doesn't have an IG, for these kinds of prohibited personnel practices that he was engaging them in on the job. And, I'm a skeptic. You know, off air, you said that about yourself, Francis. By nature, you're a skeptic. I am. Mm-hmm. I think it's a healthy way to practice law, because people who believe, you know, that everything's just going to go right and for you, I think, is a little bit naive about the system. But here, the system really did hear these employees, and I'm surprised. It was the political head of the agency, mm-hmm. and no one really was they actually stepped up to the plate. So he was accused back 4 years ago of doing to his own employees what his office was supposed to be investigating and protecting federal employees and running them out, putting politicals in. And they went to OPMIG, started an investigation. The Hill, the House Committee, Oversight Committee, started an investigation of him to see if he was really up to that. And he then hired Geeks on Call mm-hmm. to scrub from his computer, I think, emails that related to what they were investigating, and then he failed to disclose that when he was questioned.
A lot of mistakes there for somebody who's a lawyer by trade.
He failed to disclose it, and the House committee was questioning him on it, and they sent the FBI in. And, you know, you don't see that. And that's why I thought that story was important. It wasn't just what's the status of Scott Block's prosecution. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people don't they don't see those parts of the law ever really kick into action. If you do what I did for a living, you know you cannot lie to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, on your government computer, when you're under investigation, start deleting things and try to hide it from federal investigators.
Yeah.
And here the system kicked into high gear,
mm-hmm.
and the FBI came in to serve a search warrant on the political head of the agency, and he eventually pled out. What's really interesting as to Scott Block and where the news story yesterday was that he pled out to this misdemeanor of contempt to Congress when he didn't tell them, you know, the truth about what he'd done to his government computer. And with an agreement with the government prosecutors, they thought he would avoid jail time. And yesterday the magistrate issued a decision that said, I think the statute for that he pled under, mm-hmm. which was contempt of Congress, has a mandatory minimum of 1 year. I'm sorry, 1 month.
1 month.
And I assume Scott Block does not want to spend any time in a federal prison, including 1 month. And so they thought it was all over. And apparently there's noise now that he might withdraw his plea. If he withdraws his plea, I think we're going to see a trial.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the government withdrew its charges against him, which I cannot see happening.
Doesn't.
So the federal community that watches watches the watchdogs has been very interested in the story for years. They thought it was almost over, and it's not.
The other piece of this that I think is interesting is the status of the Office of Special Counsel now, because President Obama's just in December nominated somebody to replace him. It's been run by career staff since then.
For over 2 years.
Yeah, Carolyn Lerner is President Obama's nominee. What does that mean for people who have business with the Office of Special Counsel when you don't have a political appointee, an anointed leader with the endorsement of the current administration in there? Anything? Does it make a difference?
You know, a lot of our work is before the Office of Special Counsel, and certainly the careers know how to run the office. And the deputy has been acting on and off, and they've had people acting as the head of the agency for a while. It is, you know, France is a small agency. So, and it really has a very narrow mission. And so to that extent, you know, I think the careers have done a really great job keeping the place running, mm-hmm. and in the right direction. But people like, you know, if you work for the government, you like that, you know, there's some affinity associated with the political head. And I think it's more about affinity, mm-hmm. than it is actually about the efficiency and direction of the office. But I'll say this, I'm sure that, you know, it was 8 years of Republican administration. So now there's a Democrat administration. And I'm sure that once that appointee is in place and confirmed, you'll feel an oomph,
mm-hmm.
and a slight degree change of a focus, because that's just the nature of,
right. It's just the way it works.
It's just the nature of it. But are they processing complaints? You know, are they in doing their investigations and trying to get resolutions for employees? Absolutely.
Debbie Roth, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week's from the Washington Post. The headline is Bush Whistleblower Protector Faces Jail. You can read the whole thing at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Federal News Countdown continuing with my story number two of the week, when the In-Depth with Francis Rose rolls on in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Mixed news on the jobs front. America's jobless rate is down sharply, falling to the lowest level in 2 years, 9%. But the economy actually added fewer jobs than it has in the last 4 months. Here's CNBC's John Harwood.
The administration is looking for jobs being created about 10 times the rate that we saw in this report to try to bring that unemployment rate down in a more lasting way.
Other news, anti-government protesters are at it again in Egypt. Night has fallen on a massive rally in Cairo without the violence of yesterday's demonstrations. NBC's Ron Allen is there.
It's essentially a political rally that's going on and on into the night. It's not a violent protest. There have been no confrontations of significance between the military and the protesters.
The U.S. continues to call for a peaceful transition of power. And digital theft still alive and well, and it could be happening next door. A new survey says 32% admit borrowing their neighbor's unencrypted Wi-Fi connection. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
You know what? Life is touching. Really. From the moment we get up until we fall asleep, we're touching stuff. The escalator, the microwave, the car seat 9 times a day, you name it, we touch it. That's why it's important to disinfect the things we touch most with Clorox disinfecting products. They help kill the germs that can live on surfaces for up to 48 hours. That's a long time. So whether it's a doorknob, your kids' toys, or the handle on the fridge, keep disinfecting with Clorox disinfecting products. Use as directed on hard, non-porous surfaces.
Our place is about to turn into game day central, but this year, I'm ready.
Sam's Club member Paula Rickenstein.
Tasty appetizers, snacks, ice-cold drinks, even 3D HD TVs. All at great savings.
Like a Vizio 42-inch Razer LED 3D television for just $9.97. Plus, join now through February 6th and score a gift card worth up to $25.
Bring it on, game day. I'm putting Sam's Club in.
Learn more at samsclub.com/entertaining. Sam's Club. Savings made simple.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
The great big new challenge is basically discount buying. Both Google and Facebook are trying to get into it. The number one website to get coupons, Groupon. This is called the social buying market. Earlier this month, Google revealed that Groupon turned down an offer for $6 billion from Google.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and Aview Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Profile America, Friday, February 4th. With the announcement of the official population count from the 2010 census last December, the spotlight has shifted from the taking of the census to its constitutional purpose. For many decades, the number of seats in the House of Representatives was increased after each census. In 1913, the House capped its size at 435 members. Since that time, the fixed number of seats has been reapportioned after each census to ensure that seats in the House, along with political power, accurately reflect the population gains and losses of the individual states. The steps in this process and the deadlines involved are set by law. You can find these and more facts about the 2010 census online at census.gov.
Plan now to attend the Federal Senior Management Conference, the preeminent conference for federal senior managers on April 10th through the 13th in beautiful Cambridge, Maryland. Presented by Fed Insider, FSMC is presented for government by government, with registration open only to government employees. Together with your peers, explore ways to execute the administration's newest policy initiatives to forward the business of government. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 2. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories that they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week for people who work for the federal government or do business with the federal government. Rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and count them down on the Federal News Countdown. And as I told you at the top of the show, I'm one of the people this week. I'm not sure I would call myself an expert necessarily.
But you bring enough people in, you ought to know the subject matter.
But I'm here, so I'm a warm body, as they say.
You have good stories, though.
Well, thank you very much. Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth is my other panelist on the countdown this week. And my story number 2 is by our Pentagon reporter, Jared Serbu. The headline is DOD Needs More Workplace Flexibility.
Interesting story. I read it.
Well, there's a juxtaposition of thoughts about workforce issues here that I thought was really interesting. This is a story that about Admiral Mike Mullen going to the National Press Club on Tuesday and talking about workplace flexibility. And I think if you ask the average person not associated with the Pentagon or not in Washington, D.C., what the idea of workplace flexibility was in the military, they would say flexibility means you have the freedom to choose either to obey orders or be court-martialed. and in fact, that's exactly 180 degrees opposite of what Admiral Mullen's talking about here. He says, people ask me about the future of our military. I use only one metrics. And he talks about the metric. That's the young people who are coming in. If we keep the right ones in, we're going to be fine for decades to come. They have choices because they're so extremely capable. And it's, first of all, it's the opposite of what I think a lot of people think about the military. I think a lot of people now that we have a volunteer military believe that it's last best hope for young people. If you can't do anything else, or if your life is messed up and you need discipline, you go in the military. And in fact, that's not the case. All you have to do is go to one Navy football game like I went to in the fall and see who the cadets are. I'm sorry, that's not the right name. Who the midshipmen are that are choosing to go to the military academies and see the quality of people who are there. The idea that Admiral Mullen wants to make the military someplace that's welcoming, not just to the families, and they've done a lot of work over the last decade or so at administering to the families who are in the military and not just the members themselves. But the idea, I think, that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs would be saying, how do we make this an employee-friendly organization?
Isn't that interesting?
Is really quite opposite of what a lot of people think the military would be, or in some cases, should be doing.
Yeah. You don't think of something like the military where, you know, it's all about rank and file. It's all about, hierarchy and orders as having flexibilities in their workplaces. Mm-hmm. And that really was a very interesting story. And to hear it from the Joint Chiefs, you know, for that concept to come out of the Joint Chiefs office, you picked a pretty good story of the week, because that's certainly, you know, DOD, the entire, you know, the civilian workforce is hundreds of thousands, as is the uniform services. So you're talking about a story that really could affect a large part of the federal system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a perception out there, and understandably so, that you go in the military and they tell you you're going to be here for 2 years, and then you're going to be here for 2 years, and you're going to do what we tell you to do. And it from what Jared is writing here and what Admiral Mullen said, it appears that they are shooting for the idea of within that structure, maintaining the structure that we need to maintain to have a cohesive military, what can we do to keep these good people who, when their tour is up, have a lot of flexibility? It's interesting. We've talked about the recession a little bit in times that you've been on the program and the economic situation that we're in. But every single vendor that comes in and sits in that chair on Thursdays for my industry chatter series says, I can't hire enough of the good people who are doing the things that my company needs to do to grow. We're hiring. So if you know good people, we got our openings on the website. So there are jobs for people who are in.
Which would entice those people who've served.
That's exactly.
Successfully.
And that's exactly where I'm going. If you have had a successful career in the military, there are a lot of places that you can leave and go and make a good living. And that's why I think this is wise that Admiral Mullen saying we are competitors here. We can't just sit back and say we're the military and we offer this particular lifestyle. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, well.
Yeah, it's
we'll
not just.
Take the next person.
And it's not just, you know, you know, for people who, you know, fall into hardened times and, you know, it's their last best hope of staying out of prison or something like that. You know, the military, and I remember learning this from my father growing up, the military really was a great place for that first generation of Americans,
mm-hmm.
Whose families came from countries that weren't first world and, you know, the first to have formal education, graduate high school. The military, our military, it is the most modern force in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't a bad place to learn some skills and trades. And it's not just you can leave and get, you know, these high paying executive positions. People leave and they have these enormous skills
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't have afforded to bought.
Right.
You know, through a college program.
Exactly right. My story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is DOD needs more workplace flexibility. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu has it on federalnewsradio.com. That means that we are up to story number one this week for me and for Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And we'll count those down in a moment on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me. 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Something is going on at the Small Business Administration. Accusations of whistleblower retaliation, turkey farming, hostile work environment, and widespread morale problems. The OSC investigated. SBA says they're trying to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. What's the real story? Join me, Jason Miller, next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning at 7:05 for my special investigative series, Discouraged and Disrespected at SBA, exclusively on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On the countdown this week, stories selected by me. Our friend Alan Baloudis, who will be on the Federal News Countdown, was scheduled to be on today, couldn't be on today. Alan Baloudis with Cisco, and Cisco doing some very important work at a federal agency today, and Alan's on site. So I am filling in for him today, along with Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And on the countdown, we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, according to Deborah Roth from the New York Times, and the headline is White House and Egypt discuss plans for Mubarak's exit. Now, Debbie, this is a story that's all over mainstream media, but there are implications here, too, for what's going on inside our government for our people, our federal audience.
Yeah, and you know, it's not only, in my opinion, the number one story for every citizen of the world to watch what's happening across the Middle East, starting in Tunisia. There's been some indicators in Lebanon and Jordan where they and Yemen where they've been firing their governments, trying to get new ones in place to quell what they think might be their own, you know, their own citizens. And so I think for any person in, you know, in the world today, this, you know, what this if this is a democracy movement taking, you know, moving across the Middle East. After 50 years of, at least 50 years of autocratic rule, and I'm not here to talk politics, I get that. It's a story for everybody. Mm-hmm. But what I thought when I was reading the New York Times story that made it particularly important to feds was the New York Times was reporting that The Hill has already called in officials from our, you know, American intelligence agencies, probing and questioning and maybe accusing them of not alerting the Hill leadership and the president about what was really predicting that this was going to happen, who's behind it, how fast is it going to happen. And so all of a sudden, there it is, 5,000 miles away, a country in transition, hopefully a peaceful one. And our government, true to form, is picking on itself and trying to figure out, you know, did we get it right? Certainly, how do you predict? How do you predict the overthrow? How do you accurately, with precision, predict the overthrow of any country?
Well, especially in light of this, because one
it's just so much fun to watch Congress at work.
One of the things that I've been trying to figure out, and I've even reached out to some of the people, the national security people that I've had on the show from time to time and so on, nobody can say with any certainty what or who is driving this to the point where some people that are in the cynical camp like me.
I'm not so sure the Egyptians really know.
Well, that's the thing. Some people are actually starting to believe that it genuinely is what it was purported to be at the beginning, which is a group of citizens, a growing disconcertion with President Mubarak and deciding enough is enough, and we're at least going to make our views known. We're not going to try to overthrow the government. We're not going to go crazy, but we're going to protest and we're going to say we don't like the way things are going and then let it develop into whatever it's developing
into. And there, of course, is the law of physics, and an object in motion tends to stay in motion. And when, you know, when, but, and particularly with technology and the ability to communicate so quickly to so many people. You see what happened in Tunisia. Something inspired something in the Egyptians. And to watch it take off, I mean, it's just fascinating. Just as a citizen of the world, it is fascinating to watch. I'm sure that we're all also a bit anxious to see how it all plays out. But I'm sure it's going to play out. And we're all hoping for a peaceful resolution. But So I feel the story applies to everybody, anybody and everybody. And because I think anywhere in our country and across the world, people are talking about it. But there it is, you know, embedded in the New York Times story that, you know, Hill, our lawmakers in Congress are now starting to question our own intelligence agencies about their ability to predict, forecast and warn the administration and Congress. And I really, I find that intriguing, Francis. I can't describe it any other way. I'm intrigued that that's what we would be focused on.
The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein, said, at some point it had to have been obvious there was going to be a huge demonstration. She said intelligence agencies never sent a notice to her committee about the growing uprising in Egypt, as is customary in the case of significant global events. I guess it's...
What about CNN?
Well, I guess it didn't occur to her. Here's the thing. My wife's sister was
on CNN.
My wife's sister was involved in one of these flash mobs where a whole bunch of people decide they're going to show up at one place. In this case, it was singing a song, so it's totally harmless.
How about the snowball fights down at DuPont Circle and down at the Verizon Center that flashed up out of nowhere?
Thousands of people.
Remember that?
Yeah, thousands of people. In this case, it was a couple hundred people in Frederick, but they just all decided they were going to do it tomorrow. I mean, literally tomorrow. Let's do this tomorrow at this event. Let's all show up and we'll sing a song and dance, and that'll be the end of it. There's no reason for me to believe that that's not at least possible in this occasion as well, in which case there was nothing for our intelligence to necessarily be monitoring, if indeed it is what it appears to be on the surface, and that's why I go back to that.
Well, let me finish one last thing. When you read the Times, they clearly say that they were being warned. It's about whether they were adequately being warned with precision, and that, to me, is the fun part of Congress
picking
on
the
executive branch.
That's right. Deborah Roth, story number one in the countdown is White House and Egypt discuss plan for Mubarak's exit, and you can find it and all his stories we're counting down on the Federal News Countdown. Down at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. One more story to go. It's my number one most important federal news story of the week, and it's up next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
A growing advanced persistent threat is negatively affecting the way society, business, and government conduct safe and reliable communications across the World Wide Web. In the U.S., this advanced threat is adversely affecting the key intellectual property, sensitive information, and the critical systems that power our economy and ensure national security. Protecting against this threat requires an integrated approach that touches people, process, and technology to leverage and provide a way of thinking and action to address the threat challenge. Finding a solution requires us to explore how advanced persistent threats have evolved and what the global and national implications are across society, business, and government. Listen to Advanced Persistent Threat, Industrial Strength Hacking as part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices panel series featuring top cyber experts across government, industry, and academia on February 8th at 12 noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices blog at boozallen.com/expertvoices. Voices.
What is the One DHS vision and strategy? How is DHS right-sizing and consolidating its physical footprint? And what is DHS doing to better manage its resources and execute its overall mission? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these and other questions with Rafael Boris, Undersecretary for Management at DHS, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Away from your radio? Listen to Federal News Radio directly on your desktop. Click the red Listen Now button near the top of the federalnewsradio.com homepage.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every Friday at 2 counts down the news stories that are the most important, the three most important of the week as chosen by experts in the world of the federal government to people who work for the federal government. This week, the story selected by me and by Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. It's the first time I've done this. My friend Alan Balutis couldn't make it today, and so I'm pinch hitting for him. And my story number one of the week is from Federal News Radio, one of our DOD reports from the federal drive this week. And the headline is Involuntary Force Reduction Coming to the Air Force. And the story says it's move up or you're out at the Air Force. They are announcing an involuntary force reduction. Essentially, the Air Force is laying people off. Mm-hmm. And this is striking to me because they did some voluntaries. It's the equivalent of buyouts in December. And this story, the Air Force release, said that it's part of the Air Force's multi-year force management program aimed at shaping and sizing the force. With more airmen choosing to stay in the Air Force, retention's at the highest level in 16 years. And the Air Force essentially, if you read between the lines, can be choosy about who stays and who goes. It's a great place for them to be. And it's especially how it fits with where we are budget-wise, mm-hmm. what Secretary Gates has talked about in trying to reshape the entire military operation, the entire Pentagon. This element of it, in particular, the Air Force coming right out and saying, we're not wasting any time, guys and girls. Here we go.
And apparently, according to the story, they still have a couple of thousand more officers that need to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine bringing that kind of competitiveness into the military ranks?
It's really something. I mean, I
don't know that they're tuned into that.
One of the things that Secretary Gates started talking about when he started on this back in, I believe it was May, when he was at the Eisenhower Library in Kansas, was he essentially said, I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially said, we have too much overhead. We have too many flag officers that 3 stars and 4 stars that are just there.
We're a bit top heavy.
A little bit top heavy. And that's where we're going to go. And this is the backup to that, saying, you know what? We gave you a chance to voluntarily leave and not enough of you did. So here we go. And it's not unlike what we've seen at other federal agencies from time to time.
Well, they don't do up or out, but, except the Foreign Service. Foreign Service is up or out.
And I was about to say, it's similar to what we've seen, but it's kind of to another extreme, another level of extreme.
Yeah. In the federal agencies, other than Foreign Service, which it is an up or out system, and so they're tuned into that. Mm-hmm. You know going in that if you don't get tenured, you have to move up.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get tenured, you're out.
Yeah.
That is not the executive branch. The executive branch is once you're in, you pass your probationary period, you're in for life.
Yeah, and you do what you need to do. As long as you can keep it, you can keep it.
Right, and we haven't seen RIFs since the 90s,
mm-hmm.
The mid-90s. It's unclear whether we're heading back into RIF territory, but RIFs are involuntary, and it's by seniority. This, what they're proposing in the Air Force, if I understand correctly, is about performance.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to watch this play out because of that very thing, the competitive nature.
How good can you fly that plane?
Exactly. Well, and how well can you lead your team? I mean, that's judging, setting the parameters, setting the measures. We're going to go through this whole thing, and the first thing I thought of was, are the same kinds of measures going to be applied that were applied during NSPS? And think about how that all, what all the controversy surrounding that. Story number one from federalnewsradio.com, involuntary force reduction coming to the Air Force, and all the details are at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Great countdown.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy yourself as being your own guest?
Well, it was a little bit weird, I have to confess. Doing both the panelist and anchor jobs was a little bit more than I expected, but it was a lot of fun, especially to do it with you.
You interviewed yourself very well,
Francis. Well, thank you very much. Deborah Roth on the countdown with me this week is a partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and is one of the hosts of Fed Talk every Friday at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Back on Monday with a brand new in-depth with Francis Rose. The Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck is next between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.